How is everybody doing? Welcome back to another episode of The Banker Next Door. This is our flagship show, the weekly banking update. It is good to be back. I hope everybody had a great Easter weekend last week, and I'm back in the saddle here, as it were. So I wanted to start off this week with, I wanted to show everybody this real quick. So this was an award that I received this week from a local chamber of commerce. This was the chairman's award that I got. And I wanted to talk about networking for a second. Again, I got this, you know, again, beautiful award. Everything looks great, you know, absolutely great. But this was an award. So I'll take a step back for a second. So this is an award that I received for serving on the leadership, the executive committee for a local chamber of commerce. And I had served on that committee for 3 years, and I had done basically performed a 6-year service as a board member to the chamber of commerce. And I think that's a pretty typical rotation that you would see at a lot of chambers. You know, say, you know, every chamber does it a little bit differently, but you see some different variations there. But I did not look at this award as this was not a 3-year achievement for being on the leadership team. It wasn't a 6-year achievement for being on the board of directors. This was a more 15, 16 year commitment, because that's when I originally joined the Chamber of Commerce, was back in 2008, that I had been serving on. And, you know, you have to build. In other words, for some of the younger audience members out there, you know, I mean, people, you know, that want to just kind of get out there in the world, as it were, and you're out there and you want to kind of, you know, make a name for yourself and get going over. It takes a long time, even in your local community, wherever you're at. You know, 10 years, 20 years to build a name and a reputation for yourself out in the greater community. And you have to do a lot of networking, and you have to be very committed to it. And you have to try different things. You got to try chambers of commerce, Rotary clubs, BNI, just to name a few different things. You know, work on some nonprofit boards and things of that nature. But my point being there is that, you know, I looked at this as, this was something that I had achieved, that had taken me, you know, again, 15, 16 years to get to that point where I was now being, you know, honored with that award. I mean, it was a long time coming. And, you know, and I think of all the wonderful people that I met in that, along that journey, all the great chamber members and the different, people in the business community locally that I worked with. And I'm sure a lot of you out there that have had these experiences. But I would definitely like to impart upon people that, you know, like that journey, that networking journey for me, doesn't end. It doesn't end here. It just continues on. You know, might continue on with different things. I might try different groups or try different stuff or whatever, but that networking journey, as it were, never really ends. And we all have to, everybody has to network. I don't really care what business you're in, what it is you do. You know, we all have to have a continuing commitment to networking out there. And again, it just, and for the younger viewers, for people who are, you know, maybe in high school or college or in their early 20s, maybe just getting into the corporate world, don't be afraid to network. You know, that would be my message. Don't be afraid to network. Don't be afraid to get out there and get involved in a lot of different things in your community. That's how you're going to get your name out there. You know, social media is great, but I don't think anything will replace those human face-to-face relationships that you build with other people. And those are truly the most powerful things at the end of the day. And like I said, I was hoping this was going to be like kind of a positive message that, you know, people would take, you know, good thing away from that. So anyway, that's my spiel on networking here to kind of start us off. So let's get in. Let's talk about some numbers. I've got a whole stack of stuff to talk about here this week. So let's talk about some economic numbers from last week. Some things that came in. We had consumer inflation expectations. Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong list here. So this is for this last week. We had the JOLTS, the job openings. We had the ADP non-farm employment on Wednesday. We had the, on Thursday, we had the continuing jobless claims. We had the initial jobless claims. We had the trade balance. And then on Friday, we got the big thing, the unemployment rate, the unemployment report. And unfortunately, once again, the unemployment report turned out to be a joke of an employment report. I mean, you know, all of the mainstream media reported on how, oh, we created 300,000 jobs and the unemployment rate fell or whatever. And it turned out to be all nonsense. When you really dug in deeper on the numbers, you saw that all the jobs that were created were part-time jobs. Number of full-time jobs, we lost over 6,000 full-time jobs, whereas all of these jobs that were created were all part-time positions, and they all went for the most part to foreign-born workers. Not good for the economy. I don't think anybody, you know, leaving today to go work their fourth job of the week I don't think that's how they intended for their lives to be going. So as far as I'm concerned, again, I mean, these economic numbers, they just seem like gaslighting and just seem like total fairy tale. The other thing is the government spending. The two top hires were healthcare and government. And, you know, so you take those government jobs out of there and, you know, you take the money from the government going into healthcare, and what do you got? You know, you take that ridiculous spending out of the equation. And things don't look so hot at the moment. So that's that. So now what do we got coming up this week? Okay, so this week on Monday, we got consumer inflation expectations. On Wednesday, we have core consumer price index. We have regular consumer price index, the CPI. We have the 10-year treasury note auction. We have the FOMC meeting minutes. On Thursday, we have the continuing jobless claims. We have core producer price index. We have initial jobless claims. And then on Friday, we get the Michigan consumer sentiment. So we have some inflation data coming in terms of the CPI. I believe the expectation on that is that the inflation is going to be back up. So that brings the rational question for the Federal Reserve. If the jobs report is so great, as the mainstream media is reporting, we've created 300,000 plus jobs in the last month. The employment rate fell. Inflation is still rising. So where is the, why do you need to cut rates? What's the justification for cutting rates at this point? I mean, I see none. I think the reality is you have big justification for raising rates because the economy is not doing so hot. It's not doing that well. But as long as these numbers for these economic indicators, the jobs, GDP, and everything, as long as they keep getting reported as if everything is great and hunky-dory and we're just super strong, there is zero justification for the Fed to cut the rates. I mean, I don't think the Fed should cut the rates just because of inflation. Inflation is ticking back up. Inflation has not been defeated. And as I've said before, if you cut the rates, you run the risk of permanently embedding the inflation that's already happened. You run the risk of permanently embedding that inflation, that inflation is never going to leave the economy. And some people have a hard time kind of getting their head around that. But like I said, we'll come back to that in just a second. So I want to get into... all right, let's see here. Let's get into some news articles. We'll start out with some news articles and then we'll go back to some other news here. So what do we got here this week? So SBA gets pushback on lender license decision with recipient targeted for sale. So the Small Business Administration needs to exercise the utmost caution when it comes to allowing new lenders to join its traditional loan program, a key lawmaker said in a letter sent to the agency this week. So the SBA selected Funding Circle and two other lenders to receive new SBLC licenses after pushing through rule changes that ended a decades-old moratorium on new lenders in its 7A loan program. The purpose of the changes, the SBA said, was to boost lending to small businesses. However, Funding Circle is actively shopping itself while its application was under review without telling the SBA that. So I had said before, I wasn't a big fan of these actions on the part of the SBA. I didn't think that the SBA should be doing this, but you know, they went ahead and did it anyway. So yeah, you know, we'll see how that continues to play out there. The Fed's Bowman calls for including discount window and liquidity coverage ratio. There's work to be done to improve the Federal Reserve discount window, but the agency should move cautiously and not make sweeping changes, according to Fed Governor Michelle Bowman. So see what happens there. Inflation could linger, sending a suspending economy in a no landing scenario. Inflation has been stickier than economists have expected. Not this guy. And a recent survey of investors found more people are seeing a greater chance the economy could remain as it is now for an extended period of time. Yes. Nearly half of respondents to the survey by Deutsche Bank Research think inflation could stay just above the Federal Reserve's 2% target, but that the central bank won't raise rates again to try to tame it, ending this inflationary cycle with what economists call no landing. Consumers' inflation expectations align with this call and could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Stubborn inflation is pushing some forecasters to believe there's potential for the economy to have no landing and continue to run hot despite inflation's persistent price pressures. So again, like I said, until the government gets spending under control, you're not going to be able to beat this inflation back. The only thing that would beat it back is if the Fed, you know, increased rates to 12%, and then basically crashed the entire economy. So that, yeah, so that's, there's that. You don't want to go down that road. So SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, former FTX CEO, sentenced to 25 years in prison for crypto fraud. SBF was sentenced to 25 years in prison on Thursday for his role in defrauding customers of the bankrupt crypto exchange. He also faces forfeiture of more than $11 billion, which the government could use to compensate FTX customers. And then it goes on to say, but talk about the FTX collapse or whatever. I think 25 years was way too light of a sentence for SBF. I think SBF should have got probably 50 years plus. But he's got some friends in high places, seeing as he was the second largest contributor to a certain president's campaign in 2020. So yeah, he got off. I think he got off pretty light there, and he'll probably get out in 10 years with good behavior. Okay. Another real estate giant settles commission litigation, but new filing seeks $4.7 billion from Warren Buffett firm. So real estate giant Compass Inc. has agreed to pay $57.5 million to settle allegations spread across various lawsuits that have participated in a conspiracy to keep real estate commissions high. It's the latest action in a wave of litigation that also was brought forth a requested judgment valued at more than $4.7 billion against a Warren Buffett-owned company. The financial agreement by Compass, plus plans for a host of changes to his business practices, make Compass the most recent large firm to have settled in what had become a flood of class action lawsuits that alleged a conspiracy between the National Association of Realtors, multiple listing services, and brokers to keep commissions high, largely by requiring home sellers to pay home broker commissions. So again, we have more settlements there, and I would suggest everybody, I just did an episode on this 2 weeks ago, about the NAR lawsuits and everything. So I'd highly suggest if you want some more information on that, go check out that episode. Let's see here. Stocks rally to extend fifth straight month in March as S&P 500 rises 3.1%. So stock markets are doing okay here to start the year. New York Communities Federal Home Loan Bank advances rose while the industry total dropped in the fourth quarter of 2023. So New York Community Bank grew its Federal Home Loan Bank borrowings in the fourth quarter of 2023 as the industry's overall exposure shrank. The U.S. banking industry's Federal Home Loan Bank advances fell 3% quarter over quarter. As such, Federal Home Loan advances also shrank as a percentage of total liabilities, down from 2.3% in the 2023 third quarter. So basically, New York Community Bank, they advanced, let's see here, it says they grew their advances at the most of 55% to a total of $20 billion there in the fourth quarter, knowing that they were had a lot of problems on the horizon. So not necessarily shocking news there. So U.S. Bank's efficiency ratio worsens for the third straight quarter as expenses spike. The U.S. banking industry's aggregate efficiency ratio worsened for the third consecutive quarter at an accelerated pace as non-interest income fell again and non-interest expense shot up. U.S. banks posted an aggregate efficiency ratio of 65.8% in the 2023 fourth quarter, up 10.2 percentage points from the previous quarter and 10.9 percentage points from the year ago quarter. The metric falls as banks become more efficient, calculated by dividing non-interest expenses by net interest income and non-interest revenue. So for anybody who doesn't know, the efficiency ratio is one of the key banking ratios that we have in the industry. And it's something that everybody looks at and everybody follows. You can think of it like this. What does it cost you to make a dollar? So it basically, if your efficiency ratio is 65%, that means it costs you 65 cents to generate every dollar in revenue that you, it costs 65 cents to generate every dollar in revenue that you generate. So think about it, and though you could think about it in kind of those terms. And obviously the lower efficiency ratio you have, the better it means. It means you have better margins. You're more efficient supposedly at creating money. But I think a lot of it also depends on your strategy, what you're doing, your business lines and stuff like that. Just because you have a relatively higher expense ratio doesn't mean you're going to be like an unprofitable bank or an unsuccessful bank. Like I said, it just depends. I think some of it depends on your situation, but always a good thing to look at. U.S. banks show signs of multifamily weakness, warning signs of distress in the multifamily lending market flashed more brightly in the third quarter of 2023 amid concerns that a wave of new construction had hurt some landlords' ability to raise rents. Yes, I would agree with that. I think you have seen a huge amount of apartment units hitting the market in the last year or so, and you got even way more coming on the rest of this year. So yeah, I think that's going to it's going to put a stress as all those apartment units come on the market, and very expensive units, I might add, not cheap units. Market rent units are going to be renting for $2,000-$3,000 a unit, so a lot of money. U.S. housing market. So U.S. home prices grew at a record pace in January. So U.S. home prices continued to scale higher in January. On an annual basis, the 10-city composite logged a 7.4% increase in January, up from a 7% rise recorded the previous month. Mortgage rates show signs of declines. The 30-year mortgage was hovering around 6.81% compared to 6.97% on March 8th before dipping to 6.92% as of March 25th. So again, still hovering just below 7% there on the average with mortgage rates. Let's see here. U.S. bank investor activism to rise more if rates fall. Stock performance rebounds. Well, we'll see. Maybe. U.S. bank goodwill impairment reaches 13-year high in 2023. U.S. bank goodwill impairment charges surged to their highest point in over a decade in 2023. 12 U.S. banks recorded $10.23 billion in goodwill impairment last year, the highest yearly total since 2010. The surge came during a tumultuous year in which industry experts say stock price pressure, a liquidity crunch, and preliminary credit cracks forced more banks to conduct interim tests outside of their usual annual schedule. So something to keep an eye on there. New York Community Bank and Blue Ridge Bank shares are the U.S. banks with the lowest valuations. These two banks held the dubious distinction of being the lowest valued U.S. banks at the end of March. Not really any shocker there. Loan and deposit betas diverge as banks look for bottoms in margins. So delayed rate cuts have pushed out hopes for lower deposit costs, and data from the fourth quarter of 2023 showed the potential for asset yield and liability cost shifts to disappoint. So analysts still anticipate a continued tailwind as asset yields climbs. Banks started to take steps to change deposit strategies in anticipation of lower rates, and slower and fewer rate cuts could be positive for much of the industry overall. So we'll continue to see how that plays out. Bank regulators step in to help community banks prevent fraud. The OCC is growingly concerned about the impact of rising fraud on the banking industry and community banks' ability to combat it. As fraud is on the rise, large banks are better positioned with resources to combat it, while community banks lack the resources. Acting Comptroller of the Currency Michael Hughes said in a speech April 4th, unlike community banks, large banks can use their internal data to develop anti-fraud models, invest in information technology systems and artificial intelligence talent, he said. To help bridge this gap, the OCC has engaged with core processors, which it believes is key to helping combat fraud. Yes, we are the government and we are here to help people. There is a grain of truth there, but most of that is nonsense. So anyway, all right, let's continue on here. Let's see. I still have other good stuff here. Let's see. Okay. Oh, this is big stuff here, right here. Global bank messaging network SWIFT announced the results of the second phase of industry-wide sandbox testing on its central bank digital currency interlinking solution, where collaborative experiments found new use cases for SWIFT solution across the digital trade, securities, and foreign exchange. The network plans to launch a new CBDC platform in the next 12 to 24 months, aiming to connect the CBDCs currently in development to the existing finance system, according to a report by Reuters, citing an interview with SWIFT's head of innovation, Nick Kerrigan. So, if you don't think that they're planning a central bank digital currency, there it is, right there in black and white. I could give you guys a dozen reports from BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. They are full-blown working on central bank digital currencies. They're working with SWIFT to make the system to see how they can get all this to work. You have something like 112 central banks around the world all working on digital currencies. Despite what Jeremy Powell says, the Federal Reserve is working on a central bank digital currency. They're actually working on two versions. They're actually working on a wholesale version for banks and for kind of the backside of the financial system. And they're working on a retail version for all of us. So there is no doubt the plan is to roll out a central bank digital currency at some point here in the future. And this is going to be a major, major fight, because the banks are all going to want this. And I for one, do not want it. I believe that a lot of people out there will not want this. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And like I said, I'm working on an episode here on central bank digital currency that I will roll out and I will show everybody in the near future. And hopefully everybody will, hopefully people will learn a lot from that episode and we'll get some good stuff there. Let's see, what else we got? We just got kind of economic activity. Okay, here we go. So here's a couple of interesting articles here I'll have to kind of wrap up here this week. Okay, so this is banks stall for time on office loans. So banks' commercial real estate loans are now growing an accelerating rate. In the first quarter of 2024, they grew sequentially 1.2% on a seasonally adjusted basis, according to Federal Reserve data. This ended a slowdown in growth last year, which had fallen to 0.3% in the fourth quarter. MSCI Real Assets noted in a recent report that $215 billion in mortgages slated for maturity in 2023 were, to their knowledge, not refinanced, nor was there a sale of the underlying property. We believe that these loans have been granted some short-term extensions to their maturity date. For banks, this phenomenon, which critics dub the extend and pretend, has added significantly to 2024 maturities. In a recent report noted that banks expected 2024 real estate maturities rose 34% from previous estimates. So for now, despite a sharp slowdown in new commercial mortgage deals being originated last year, longer lingering loans and prior obligations to lend to projects as they move forward are sustaining banks' lending volumes. Existing commitments keep funding up and maturing loans have nowhere to go. They estimated that about 40% of banks' CRE loans maturing this year are actually ones that were supposed to mature in 2023. So this is a good news, bad news situation. On the one hand, loans aren't being written off and losses aren't being crystallized, but they also aren't being paid off and resolved. The issue lingers and forces investors to keep making calls about whether the loans will ultimately perform as banks are anticipating. Large banks tracked by Autonomous have, at last report, set aside loan loss reserves for their office portfolios worth about 8% of those loans. How much cushion investors demand will play a major role in whether bank stocks can keep pushing ahead. It's an interesting thing. Banks are continuing to go with the extend and pretend and keeping flowing forward with that. And, you know, that it's just, yeah, it's not a good thing. That's just not a good thing for banks at all. You know, and then, so let's see here. All right, let's finish up with Naomi Snyder, editor-in-chief for Bank Director. She had a blog this past week called Wishful Thinking. Late last year, investors were anticipating that the Federal Reserve would cut interest rates by as much as 150 basis points in 2024. 3 months later, we're still waiting for the first move. On Wednesday, the Federal FOMC committee held the benchmark federal funds rate steady in the range of 5.25% to 5.5%. It turns out inflation has declined, but not enough to please FOMC members. The Fed's inflation target of 2%, and in February, the CPI rose at an annual rate of 3.2%, although that was down from 6% reported a year earlier, but still not good enough. Plenty of economic indicators, including employment, remain strong. you guys know how I feel about that one. Giving the Fed fewer reasons to cut rates. So recent indicators suggest that economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace, the Fed said in a statement released Wednesday. Job gains have remained strong and the unemployment rate has remained low. The good news is that for now, at least, rate cuts appear likely later this year. The median Fed funds rate projects offered by individual FOMC members was 4.6%, implying 3 25% rate cuts between now and the end of 24. Stocks jumped on the news on Wednesday. All three major indexes finished at record highs. Striking the right balance on rate changes remains critical as the Fed continues its pursuit of a soft landing. What does this mean? In practical terms, tellingly, the medium rate projection among FOMC members for 2025 jumped to 3.9% from 3.6% in December. That would suggest 2, maybe 3.25% rate cuts next year, a sign that the Fed could be inclined to move more cautiously than many bankers and investors would like. So, yes, I think that the Fed is put themselves into a major box here. I think a lot of the economic indicators are bogus. They're BS. There's a lot of gaslighting from the mainstream media. And, you know, you're getting the rosy picture based on headlines, and they're not really digging into the numbers to give you that in-depth analysis. And if you look under the hood, so to speak, you're going to see that the economy is not doing well, that the inflation has hurt a lot of people. And amazingly, even people that are making $100,000 or $200,000 a year are falling behind in this economy, if you could believe that. It's crazy. And so the Fed, on the one hand, if you just go off of the headline numbers and the headlines of what's being reported in the press, they have literally absolutely no reason to cut rates right now. None, zero. There's no reason for the Fed to cut rates the rest of this year. But if you look at the reality and you dig into the numbers, you see that, yeah, there are some really good reasons for the Fed to think about starting to cut rates right now. So the Fed has put themselves in the box. They put themselves in this pickle, and we'll have to see how things remain out. But I, for one, would not be surprised if things basically remain relatively where they are for the most part of the rest of the year. So, you know, we'll just have to keep an eye on that and see what continues to happen. But I thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope everybody will go and check out some of the other episodes that I've posted up. If you haven't had a chance yet to check out my Lords of Easy Money series, please check that out. We're now up to part 9, and we just got into the second part of the book. The book has 3 parts to it and 18 chapters. We just got into the second part of the book, and so I hope you'll go and check out that series. Please check out some of the other episodes that I've posted up this week. And I would just say, you know, please make sure to check us out. We are on YouTube, Rumble, and all major podcast platforms. Make sure to go out and check the bankernextdoor.com. And as always, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe. That always helps the channel. And I will look forward to seeing you all again next week. And have a great rest of this weekend and a great rest of the week. And see everybody again real soon. Thanks a lot.